Okay, welcome to the September Creative Writing Group meeting. Thanks for coming, everyone.
Stunning silence. That never happens. Okay, so this month we are talking about stereotypes and tropes.
Yay.
So just because this is obviously the first one that we're recording, I'm going to go around and do a bit of a visual exercise, but that's cool. Can you please take one? Do not look at it. Put it face down. There is something right on the other side.
Keep it secret, keep it safe.
Take the bar off, ask for more.
So, yes, anyone, random ones, all good. So,
there
is a thing written on the other side. I said no.
Cheats.
There's always one. okay, what I want you to do is turn them over and write down the first thing that you think of, positive or negative, about the thing on the card. First thing that comes to your mind.
Put it on the hard hitting. No, that's a
high
one.
So can you tell me what?
On the card?
That's my writing. So everyone just written down first thing?
Yep.
Aha,
I found a pen.
That was an eye then.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to read yours out then?
Racism.
Okay, you need to introduce another thing at the top because we haven't seen that.
Right. Southern accent from the US, racism.
Yeah.
The racism's from me. That's what it makes me think of. I said from, not for.
Okay.
Mine's dancer, and I rate erotic.
Okay.
librarian, books.
Okay.
Cheerleader, and I thought heroes, and I'm merely thought character, so what?
Okay.
I had grandmother, and I wrote down lavender scent.
Okay.
I had Muslim. I wrote down burqa.
Mm-hmm.
I had bisexual. That's a best of both worlds. I had priest. I had godly, like spiritual.
Spiritual, yeah. I had Russian, so I said drinks vodka.
That's the done, yeah.
Yeah. So that's just a little thing to get us going on stereotypes. Chances are what you've written down is probably part of the stereotype associated with that particular thing.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Does someone want to give a go at defining what a stereotype is?
It's an assumption?
Yeah?
It's a general assumption made usually by a group of people based on how other groups of people are represented in media, maybe? Or in the general consciousness?
Yeah.
I'm not going more complex than that.
I guess basically what's expected, maybe?
Yeah. Setting expectations is something that it does, yeah.
Assuming someone will behave a certain way because they look a specific way.
Yeah.
Reading the book, why is that?
Pretty much. They tend to be pretty snap judgments. I have oversimplified generalisation about a group of people. It's got nothing really to do with individuals, it's more about groups, right? Yeah, and homogenising. I try to mix up the prompts, the things on the top, with different types of stereotype. Just to think about the different groups that tend to get labelled with stereotypes. For example, I mean, gender is one. I decided not to write man or woman on the top of any of these because too much of a can of worms. so gender is obviously a big one. Race.
Religion.
Class.
Religion. Class, yeah. What else?
Social.
Yeah. Occupation.
All accounts are boring. Come on.
Well, that's the thing, right? Yes.
All lawyers are assholes.
Yeah,
you said geography. I can't speak tonight. It's really awesome. Do you mean nationality?
Well, no, I mean,
this person over here mentioned, you know, she thought of a particular region.
It was the accent,
yeah.
Not the region.
That's right, but it's still a geographic region.
It's a regional story.
Place of origin,
yeah.
Should we say.
I mean, you know, when you watch True Blood, you will expect them to be white trash hicks, don't you?
And they are.
And they are. Panned to the stereotype.
Wait, no, there's one black dude.
Who's gay? Oh,
that's
God.
Okay. That and his name is a token.
In the books, he gets killed off.
Yeah.
So his middle name is Token. Yeah.
Yeah.
Appearance.
Yep.
I did have in the stack somewhere blonde, because that in itself is a stereotype.
So is
age.
That the reason for the
hair? They had more fun.
I found the gentleman prefer them.
Yeah, I've yet to bear that one out. So, usually for a lack of gentleman. Yeah, any other types of groups, we reckon? Just to give yourself like an idea of the breadth of...
Ethnicity, age group, class.
Mm-hmm.
How much they earn.
Oh, God.
Yes,
financial
status. Yeah, financial status is a big one. Don't really get yuppies anymore. That was very 90s.
How they dress.
Ability. I mean, like, whether they have a disability or a mental illness or what, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Health status.
Overweight.
I mean, appearance kind of covers a whole bunch of things from hair colour to weight to height to...
in general health.
Style of clothing, like goth is one that comes up, and
Your Satanist.
Did she say
Satanist? That's right.
Hey, they're pretty cool Satanists.
I do know some goth surroundings, but
sometimes the stereotype.
Okay, so.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've got an idea about the plethora available to us of stereotypes. Why are they bad?
Because everybody is an individual.
They're usually
they
wrong.
Take into account the individuality of each person.
Yeah.
It's an assumption, not actual thought process. It's just leading straight to the conclusion.
Yep.
Stopping there.
Maybe more than the assumption, I think it's a perception.
Yeah.
So people perceive that as being that it's just an outsider's view within particular sets of circumstances.
This might be a little bit weighted, but they tend to be made by people in power about people without power. Or at least the ones without power tend to have very negative stereotypes about them. Ever heard of angry black woman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welfare
yeah.
queens, you know, just all that sort of stuff.
The nerd
yeah.
living in his parents' basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and interestingly, they can be rooted in fact all prejudice, and quite often both. I mean, it's scary. I have conversations with people about national stereotypes, you know, the characteristics of like the French and the German and how they are so often borne out. But obviously that's the group, it's not individuals, and it's very dispersonal, impersonal.
Oh, I'd say, putting my little black hat on, is stereotype always about it?
No.
Because I'm hearing some very big negatives here.
Yeah.
No,
I did specifically ask
no
why they are bad, though.
She asked for negatives, so that's all we gave her.
But what are the, you know, what's the other side of that coin?
Good question. So why are they good? What do they give us?
Shorthand.
It's efficient, it's a snap judgment, but it does give us a starting place to approach someone.
And identify them.
Yeah. Yeah, and
how to build rapport with them.
Yes, it's sort of that base level of understanding where you can start to make connections with someone on a, you know, and understand how to talk to them. And so you could be completely wrong, and that's you know natural, I think. But it's a starting place. As long as it's not your finishing place, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
You say it's usually a visual identifier of what you would expect. To find in that sort of person.
So do you mean that it tends to be something we judge from seeing someone?
Yeah.
So from it's externals. I think we've got accent and we've got like nationality. So it's I think first sensory impressions without really knowing someone.
necessarily. Is that fair?
Yeah.
It can make descriptions a lot easier.
Yes. Well, see, we're doing that in general, so yeah, I want to get to the writing part about
why. But if you're trying to describe someone to another person.
Oh, okay.
Applying a stereotype they know can
make
it much easier.
He looks like an angry midget, you know.
An angry black midget is gay.
Okay, now you're just mixing all the stereotypes together, and that's less helpful.
I'm just trying to imagine that stereotype, because it'd be like, okay, so we're going for angry black midget, fine, but then stereotypically gay, so I am so angry right now, guys.
But in a high-pitched voice, because he's tiny.
I'm thinking more of the soccer mom stereotype, and the middle-aged woman wearing too much jewelry who's the bane of cashiers everywhere.
Mum dressed up as lamb.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so when it comes to using stereotypes in our writing, often we can't avoid it, but why is it not great to use stereotypes in our writing?
It's lazy.
Cliche.
Cliche, yes.
It can be alienating to readers.
Yeah.
Basically, it's offensive.
Can be, yeah.
Yeah.
So when does something be a characteristic and not a stereotype? Where's that? Does one just blend in the other one and you just got to draw a line somewhere?
Well, a stereotype's not really a single characteristic. It's, for example, I've got Russian. That's something about a person, and the stereotype is everything that comes around with it. You know, drinking vodka and all the other stuff that comes with being Russian.
Involved with the mafia, that's right.
Exactly. You know, whereas when you start to learn about a person, the stereotype stuff tends to drop away, and you start to learn things about, like, yeah, they might like vodka, but they also might like puppies, you know. And, you know, if all you describe of them is the stereotypical stuff, then they're our stereotypical character.
They know Russians are bears.
Yeah, that's and bears. Then it tends to be, yeah, Russians had a lot of dancing bears. I used to do that. It tends to be quite shallow. If it's a very shallow character, tends to be quite stereotypical. And if you get beyond that, then you tend to lose the stereotype. Does that help?
It can be.
Does that make sense?
When you're actually starting, like, the story, and you want to draw the reader in, and you don't want to dump too much information on them, so you can start up with the stereotype, just to give a bit of an idea of what the character possibly is like, and then build on that as the book goes on.
Yeah.
So it can be like a starting point.
Yeah.
Take into account, stereotypes don't usually age well.
Depending on the stereotype, they can be quite cultural and quite
time-focused. What's acceptable as a stereotype now that no one would bat an eye about can sometimes become offensive in the future. Like, say, go back 40 years and you'll have stereotypes about black people eating watermelons.
They're still around,
but they're now actually really offensive.
Yes.
You know, it's like the black minstrels. Black minstrels, gollywogs. Completely offensive now. So, yes, you do have to be a little bit careful with the cultural implications of using it. Yes, completely.
When there's genre stereotypes with writing, like the romance novels, if you describe someone as, you know, dark and brooding, it's okay, he's the love interest. We know.
Yes.
We all know. If you're writing, reading a fantasy novel and, you know, a naive farm boy shows up, it's just, okay, I'm going to be with you for the rest of the novel, aren't
I? You just know he's the chosen one and his parents were actually royalty.
So there's a fantastic book, Diamond Jones, a tough guy in a fantasy
lady. Oh, God, yes, I love that.
And it just goes and nails every kind of stereotypical character or trope in fantasy.
Yeah,
it's called
A Tough Guide to Fantasy Land. There's a sequel too.
When you say nailing the stereotypes, do you mean she uses them all exactly as they are?
It's a dictionary of stereotypes.
It's like a tourist guide.
Yeah.
Okay.
For Fantasy Land, and it's pointing out all the fantasy tropes.
Okay.
It's a little.
That's what I was asking.
Is
it the straight stereotypes? It's not. Because the other thing you can do is actually subvert them and. You can subvert stereotypes and break them, and that can be quite effective by reversing expectations for the reader and making, you know, and changing the game as well. I mean, for example, you know, you mentioned that it's quite a good way to introduce characters, is to, you know, give them that stereotype, you know, allow them to have that stereotype and then get beyond that later. And one thing that can do is that things that are really, really familiar tend to kind of blend into the background, which is why it's really good for, like, secondary characters or, like, bit parts that you don't want to get into. You don't really want to flesh them out, so you kind of let them stay. Those are the stereotypical bits that you move around. But to make them interesting, you kind of have to break out that stereotype and get beyond it. So, yeah, using just stereotypes can be quite uninteresting and fairly unengaging for the reader. It's when we get into who they really are beyond that image that you start with that they start to actually become something we want to follow and want to connect with. So, yeah, the farm boy wandering around, he's discovered a magical sword. Yeah, we might be following him for the rest of the novel, but at least please make him interesting.
Oh my God, that happens so often.
Chosen one.
It helps if you get published. If you, like, if the publisher is just, they're very strong with genre,
mm-hmm.
and you have to meet the criteria of that genre to get your book published with that publisher.
With traditional publishing.
Yeah,
with especially
with
romance.
Yeah.
Oh, I was about to say, so you've tried working with Harlequin or Mills and Boone, eh?
Especially with
romance. I went to a genre writing workshop earlier this week, so that's why I knew that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was free. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, having things that are familiar,
yeah,
publishers find them really reassuring.
Yeah.
Traditional publishing is a slow machine. And
yeah.
Slow to change, and it likes familiar and safe and saleable.
Yeah.
So if you get a fantasy book and the main character is a planet.
You're not going to get published traditionally, so it all depends.
There's your
definite. So I think you need to ask yourself first if you want the story to be published traditionally, and then go the stereotype route, and then try to figure out how you're going to do it. But if you're not going to publish traditionally, you can do whatever you want with the stereotype.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty normal to break them as well.
You don't need to follow specific rules. Yeah.
Yeah.
They do like, you know, the same, but a little bit different. Yeah, that's like, farm boy saves the world and wins the kingdom, but the plot twist is he's twins, and no one knows who's the oldest.
What?
Or it's a girl. It's a girl.
Yeah, that one's been done. That one's not new anymore.
It's
Yeah.
They'd like you to just change, like, a couple of things. So there's something
just
new about it, but it's also familiar.
Yeah.
As long as it's just minor stuff, I think it might be the traditional publishers thinking.
Yeah, I mean.
But that's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah. I mean, it's about how you use them, and there's lots of different ways to use stereotypes to your advantage, and not use them as a crutch to kind of shortcut your character building. It's really not character building. It's
kind of the opposite.
It's sort of the opposite. It is a way to make them incredibly shallow, so you kind of have to be a little bit careful. But what are some good ways to use them? Apart from shortcutting, introducing characters, how else can you use stereotypes in your story?
They're a great way to mislead the reader just a little bit.
Yeah.
You set up a stereotypical situation so they think they know what's going to happen, and then you know what they think is going to happen, so you can surprise them.
Mm-hmm.
Like setting places.
Kind of might shade in like a 5-second minor character or something. Like, you don't need to hear a backstory about someone who serves someone's food.
Yeah, you don't need to know the member of a pizza delivery boy. Unless you were into that, but that would be its own story, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then it helps blend into the background, those 5-second appearances.
Yeah.
So they don't overshadow the main story.
Yeah.
You can use them to help set the scene. So, you know, if just, you got this type of character around, then you're probably in this kind of location or whatever.
Yeah.
So can you also use it to highlight tension? So, you know, if you've got the battle-hardened marine and just crack himself, you know, it's really, really happening.
Yeah. Contrast down is one which is similar. So, yeah, it's showing them doing something quite wildly against a stereotype.
The thing with soldiers is you don't know what they're going to do until they do it. When when the shit hits the fan, they all sorts of reactions come out, like, usually mostly pissing themselves because of the bloodshed and that sort of stuff.
And then the shit really does hit.
It's something.
Comedy?
Yep.
Yeah.
Stereotypes can be really comedic. Also quite offensive, so gotta be a bit careful.
Satire.
It can be
but satire, yes.
Well,
a hot thing in the story. If you've got your big vodka drinking Russian who also loves to bake cookies and cuddle puppies, and everyone who sees him for the first time looks up at this giant, scary looking guy and freaks out. So he looks like a stereotype and people actually acknowledge that throughout the book.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can be a bit extreme, but you can actually use them to drop a few anvils when you feel like it.
Like what?
Like if you've got Aesop. If you're trying to tell your reader something, make them think a certain thing, whatever. Moral. That's it. If there's a moral to your story,
moral,
yes.
The story. I was like, when did you know this is going?
I'll get there eventually.
Yeah,
so you can use them to either because you subvert them and you're going for everything's more than it seems kind of thing, or you're pointing out that this certain behaviour is wrong or right, depending on what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could be saying something awful. I don't know.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm finding this quite interesting because in the story that I'm writing, you know, there's a real question that I'm trying to keep as a bit of a hidden factor in the book is whether this particular group, are they rebels, are they freedom fighters, or are they terrorists? And you know, one's man freedom fighter is another person's
terrorist.
And there's this real, you know, grayscale, not black and white situation going on. So I'm finding that quite interesting. That, you know, if I call them terrorists, what's the reader going to think? Freedom fighters.
Yeah, they're really different connotations.
Yeah.
And like you're saying about, you know, stereotypes being made by the victor or the people in power or whoever. Again, you know, that sort of attachment of labels. And we are talking about labeling, essentially, pigeonholing people and situations. And yeah.
Labels
are language
bad,
is important when it comes to these things.
Labels aren't inherently bad, they help you identify things by.
Yeah,
in a system. However, of course, a lot of people don't like labels being attached to them.
Yes, attaching labels to groups is one thing; to individuals is something else.
Mm.
But it is shorthand at the end of the day, and yeah, there's ways and means. Okay, other stuff that you can use stereotypes for: education. To sort of teach people about them. This is in relation to, and also I've put conflict against this one as well, to actually have the characters deal with their own stereotype in the story. So very similar to your big guy serving cupcakes. You know, it's something that if the character's actually dealing with it quite obviously in the story, you know, someone who's being forced into a role that someone thinks they should be in and they don't want to be, you know, it can actually be kind of a feature in the story, as well as a shorthand, not just a tool as a writer, if you know what I mean. And that can, we sort of talk about education again, highlighting that stereotypes
and overcoming the stereotype.
Yeah, yeah, or consciously subverting it, or consciously trying to break away from it. Because we all live in a world where people apply stereotypes to us every day, so. You know, sometimes our characters do too. yeah, anything else? Anyone can think of that we can use them for?
To comment, like to make commentary on real world stereotypes or people or whatever.
Yeah.
I just finished a book where it was written by an environmental activist, and it was set up as a stereotypical kind of Tom Clancy military thriller sort of thing. The main character is fighting against this group called the Wind Mafia, who are a bunch of big businesses who set up wind farms all over America. Outrageously trying to institute renewable energy. And it was just, I have instance saw that it was satire, although the internet didn't seem to think so. And I was like, this is just so stupid. But at the start, the main character is this ex special forces who's screwing three women in love with another person, and then he goes off to America to rescue the husband of his ex-wife who's in prison and starts screwing her and three different lawyers. But at the end, they all go back to Hawaii and have a foursome.
Wait, you're going to have to clarify, is this about the wind mafia or is it erotica?
I don't really know.
It's blended the genre.
It went with all of that. And I'm just like, I'm confused now. Because at first I thought this is written by some like Fox News watcher who wants to claim that the environmental, renewable energy market are all bastards about to, do it. And then I actually looked up the author, this environmental activist, and went, okay, I'll run with that.
So kind of gave the opposite message.
Yeah. And by the end, I was just confused and glad to finish reading it. I went, that was the ending I should have expected.
A foursome, okay.
I go into books about wind mafias expecting a foursome. I go into all my books expecting a foursome. I'm constantly disappointed.
Although someone gave me a book and it's like, oh, this has got aliens in it. You'll like it. And it turned out to be an erotic romance about this astronomer who discovers an alien by looking through a telescope. And I'm like, that was not what I wanted.
They gave you a book version of The Sims.
Yeah. Which has a lot. And I should. And then I found the sequel to it, which was called The Night of a Thousand Stars, Night of the K.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
You have very broad reading habits, don't you, Dave?
But that one was in our work library of all places.
Yeah. Oh, dear. But was it a stereotypical alien?
I think
Dave got stereotyped.
Here, read this book.
It's
aliens.
You like it.
What
the hell?
Yeah, I see? Think I was 10 or 11 when my grandmother thought, oh, Sarah likes fantasy novels. Here's one about magic and demons and such. And it was actually really graphic porn, and I've never told her. I can't tell her what she gave me. I don't remember.
You remember that this is going on the internet, right? I'm just joking.
Well, don't ever let your grandmother hear it.
It's funny you should say that because I gave
my mother might, my grandmother never will.
I said, here's some stuff that might interest you, science fiction. He gave it to his mother without actually kind of flicking through it.
Awkward.
And she's like, you realise there's a lot of porn in that, son?
Oh, okay, anyway, let's move on. Anything else on stereotypes before we move on to tropes?
I think we've exhausted them.
Yeah. Okay, tropes. Does someone want to define what a trope is for us?
Hold on, I'll get the masters to define it for us.
Oh, I've got that written down.
Oh, you've got it in your line then.
I think it's like a building brick of a story.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would say a recurring theme or character type or plot that has been so used and reused in different ways but has become part of the consciousness of people that they're aware of it now.
Yeah.
As I say, a recognisable element.
Yeah. I have a device or convention that a writer can rely on being present in the mind of the readers and set expectations.
So that farm kid picks up a sword.
And he just knows all downhill from there.
It's a lot.
So a stereotype, as we've talked about it, really mostly in relation to people, is a type of trope, essentially. It's pretty impossible to write without using some tropes.
Well, if you think you're not, you are.
Yeah.
I tried it once. It did not go well.
I did hear someone, I think it was someone in this group, who was, would just do randomize on TV tropes and just kept building their nano novel out of the tropes that came apart on the random.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. I just see you on the Facebook.
Yeah.
I want to read that story.
Can't remember where I saw that, but I suspect it was someone in this group, but this was a couple of years ago. So, but yes, yeah, so if you know get stuck, just do random on TV tropes and throw in whatever. It's kind of a DIY dare system. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, a lot of what we write, I mean, everyone knows there's nothing new under the sun when it comes to stories and so on. And we're always building on what we've been exposed to. So it's very hard to write without using something that has been used at least once before. It doesn't have to mean cliche. Just because it's been widely understood and widely used doesn't mean it's necessarily cliche, but it can be. So sometimes it's a bit like stereotype, where people often come off quite negative about using tropes. And it's all like, oh, it's a bad thing. It's like,
well, sorry, but they're the building blocks of story.
Precisely, you know, it's...
And like you said, you can't get away from it.
You can't really get away from it, so...
You can subvert it, but you can't avoid it.
Yeah. So as we go through this next bit, if someone mentions a trope, I want you to take a green bit of card and write it down, please. I'm just going to scribble this out.
You know that's going to remove half of my conversation. I practically talk in tropes.
Yes, anyone mentions a trope, please write it down. Heather may need a transcriber. But yes, we're going to use the cards later. So, yeah, tropes can be good or bad. Again, a lot of people with stereotypes.
Just one on each card?
Yes, please. One per card. Tear them in half if you need to. yeah, so they can be good or bad depending on how you use them. A lot of stereotypes, again, they can be useful, they can be...
I mean, are we supposed to take?
Anything as you like. If you mention one, just write it down. There's cards, so please use them.
Right, okay.
As many. Take six if you need them. Heather's got 20, that's fine. So, when would it be bad to use tropes, or how do you use them badly? What not to do? Let's start there.
Unknowingly using tropes can work out really badly if you're not familiar enough with the tropes in the genre you're writing in or the scenario you're writing in. You can wind up committing some, you know, major clankers, thinking you're being incredibly original, and in fact you're doing something that a million people have done before, and it is now an official fandom joke.
Farm boy finds a lightsaber.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's just like you need to know the tropes.
Yeah, it really was.
I'm just writing down heroic farm boy now.
Okay.
I'm writing down villain of farm. No,
villain of farm.
I think you've got chosen one was mentioned there. The call was
cards.
Mentioned. Sorry.
Do it. You have cards, please. Oh crap, we might use blue ones. Okay.
Cool.
I'll tear mine up. It's all good.
Using them unknowingly often means you don't use them well. You can, like, it's not impossible to do it completely by accident.
I have issues with that. Essentially you're saying that you must know every trope in existence.
That's a good point.
No.
Yeah, you can't...
No,
I mean,
one can know all the tropes.
No one can know all of them.
You need to know the big ones, though, especially of your genre.
Yeah, but if you're then turning around and say, oh, look, doesn't know that trope or this trope. Yeah.
Well, it's not even like that. It's just like if you write, you know, the traditional farm boy, long lost king story, chosen one, gets called upon to save the world or whatever, and you're expecting it to be super original, and then someone's...
No one expects that to be super original, but...
To be fair,
I've had that happen where someone's described a story to me and I was like, oh, have you read X or have you seen this? And like, no. Okay, go away and read that because that's incredibly similar.
Yeah.
And you know,
you don't have to know that they're tropes to know
no,
tropes.
No.
Well, no. Writers don't have to study TV tropes to be able to do something.
But it does help.
It can help. To be honest, it can also be just a lot of information, and it can it can actually kind of squelch things as well, because you want that fire of originality and excitement about something that, you know, you're doing something different. But you need, I think, at least to be aware that you might need to check that you have done something weird.
Yeah, I don't consider it thinking, oh, this is what we're going to
No.
On the other hand,
I'm an ideas-driven kind of thing where I come up with an idea, and I don't then go, oh, well, this is going to be that or this or that necessarily.
But I have actually seen the reverse. I've actually seen on the TV Tropes website someone advertising a particular book where I say, this is how to write a novel. And they go, right, pick this trope and this trope and this. This is a genre, so you need these tropes, da-da-da-da-da. Pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then, you know, put your own original spin on it.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that TV Tropes, there's a thing on TV Tropes that says there is no magic recipe. You can't just grab tropes 1 through 7 and go, yay, winner, bestseller. It just doesn't work like that. And I think it's not about knowing all the tropes. It's about being aware that tropes exist and come with a bunch of expectations. So if you do accidentally use one in a way that readers don't expect, it can go horribly wrong for you. And that most often comes about with people not being aware that that is a trope. So it's not about about going away and learning everything or saying, I'm going to write this trope now. It's about being aware that the stuff you write about can have unexpected connotations, and often they come through people being familiar with tropes that you might have missed. Does that make sense?
Yep.
I still have issues,
but well, it's about you come from, like, I don't look at tropes and go, I'm going to write about this thing. You know,
I write about characters and
ideas that, and situations. And I actually had a reader put Starwalker on TV Tropes and attached all these things. I was like, holy crap. I put all of those tropes in there?
It's like, if you're writing a fantasy novel about there's a magic MacGuffin and it needs to be destroyed, to be clear, MacGuffin. And if you choose that it needs to be destroyed in a volcano, maybe you should be aware that it's been done before.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
That's just generally...
I subverted that. In one way.
You had a magical boat for volcano that had to be destroyed by the government.
Oh my god, it's genius!
No.
It's
not a challenge. What I did was I'm going to have them go to a volcano, but they can't get into the volcano because the bad guys control the volcano and the land around it. That's just too much of it. So they have to find some other way.
Oh, so they look and go, screw Mordor. I'm going to find some. I'm going to just dig my own hole down to the
lava.
That's
the idea I'm going to have in my
I can have a long walk, or I can dig a deep hole.
I can shoot it into the sun. There you go. There's another one for you.
There must be another volcano somewhere.
Okay. All right, so using them unconsciously can be... I can't word tonight. So using them unconsciously... can trip us up. What other ways can we use them just badly? What happens? What is the effect?
When you snowball the tropes.
In what way? Help.
Like as a cliche.
All the tropes.
Yeah, when you've got them sequencing.
Yeah.
It's like you've got the cute, clumsy heroine who, you know, trips into the angsty vampire, and it snowballs. It gets worse and worse because there's more and more of them, and they're all building on each other.
And it's like a house of cards, and it's so thin that there's nothing there.
Yeah,
TV
if you apply logic at any point, the whole thing goes down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a sensitive
thing. Oh, yes.
Yeah, she's so sensitive, he has to watch her breathing.
It's actually her father.
So sensitive, it's stalkerish.
Yeah, okay, moving on. I have written down a noise part of the audience.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Particularly those of us who instantly recognise them and go, oh, you went there?
I would say women in refrigerators would be a big one.
Oh, yeah.
Who's writing that one down for me?
What was that one?
I'll do it.
I'm still working through all the Twilight mentions.
I didn't hear what you said.
Women in refrigerators?
Oh, right.
Sorry, Sarah's got that one for me.
Yes.
Oh, God. Awesome.
Yeah. Jeez, what is the name of the trope for the Twilight vampires?
Sparkly vampires, I think.
Is it actually sparkly vampires? For
probably,
the
probably.
Yeah, I just like, because I'm trying to get the correct trope names all the time, each time, but sometimes I'm like, oh god, what is the actual trope name?
I've got someone spends
a lot of time on too many tropes. I try not to because it kind of sucks in my life away.
They do have a disclaimer warning.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there are some tropes that when they crop up, they do.
You need that more than me. I've still got
She's doing well. Yeah, so yeah, there are some tropes that do annoy big portions of your audience. So it is a bit of shorthand. It is, it can be quite cliche. It can be quite stereotypical, and has the same kind of pitfalls that come with those. Sometimes they're just overused. People just don't want to read that shit anymore.
Oh, like when they kill the wise old mentor 1/3 to 2/3 of the way into the book. It's just, okay, yeah, Gandalf got away with this, but it needs to stop now.
God damn it.
Let's see, it happened in Final Fantasy IV, it happened in Lord of the Rings, it happened in Star Wars.
Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Which is basically Star Wars and Lord of the Rings anyway. But...
Karate Kid avoided it.
Okay.
Thank God. Oh, they came close in Karate Kid too. They flirted with the possibility.
Yeah. Okay. Other stuff. And also another element of them being overused is they actually kind of stop being taken seriously. Like, you know, vampire romance. Post Twilight, no one really takes that shit. Well, it's hard to take it seriously.
There are some people who are
sorry, one at a time. Yeah?
What? In fairness, there is now a hell of a lot more vampire romance as a result of Twilight.
Sadly.
Yeah, but they're all just copying Twilight's success. Or hoping to copy
Well, no, the paranormal romance has been around for a while.
Yeah, I know plenty that were around before
used to
Twilight
be
was even.
It
was L.J. Smith when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of
But yeah, you can overuse a trope so much. It's just cliche and overuse, and no one really wants to read any more of that stuff anymore.
Except
apparently they're saying the same about superhero movies soon. It's going to be so dumb. it'll go the way of the Western and go away. Hmm?
It used to be 1 a year or 2 a year at the most. Now there's 5 a year.
Yeah.
That's just Marvel.
Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
It's okay.
How else can we use tropes badly?
Well, some tropes carry nothing but negative connotations, like the scrappy.
Oh, yeah.
Some tropes.
You're writing
Mary
that
Sue.
One. And that one.
Yeah. Mary Sue. Yeah. What's the Scrappy? I don't know that one.
The Scrappy is Wesley Crusher.
It's basically what basically named from Scrappy Doo.
I think it's
the annoying kid sidekick.
The punctable
one.
The punctable one.
Yep. that is the Scrappy.
Right.
Straight
okay.
on.
Yeah.
Creator's pet, really. So like the creator wants the kid or used to like them. The audience doesn't like them though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that can just be annoying. And yeah.
The Mary Sue.
It's got that one.
That one where the lead character has to choose between, you know, saving, you know, whoever it is that needs saving today, the crew, the planet, whatever, and upholding the law. I have to, you know, make this terrible, difficult decision between, you know, standing by the Prime Directive or saving innocent lives.
Okay.
The hero's choice.
Okay, that's the easiest way of putting it. I'm like, do you want to go for what measure is a non-human here? Or are we going screw the rules?
I think that depends on the choice that
makes. Yeah.
I think you would like
to go either way.
So you would like to see a snap decision? Or in.
I just get really sick of the really contrived situations you have to create in order for that to work.
Yeah.
In order for it to be an actual decision,
yeah.
you really have to strain
credibility. Yeah.
And
you need exactly
exist.
That same kind of character who's actually going to have to stop and make a decision and not just automatically go one way. You
yeah.
know,
just,
like
screw the rules. Can't play as
like Mal Reynolds, you know, like
yeah.
you always know which way he's going to go.
Yeah,
pretty
<his
much>.
Way.
Yeah. What else?
Okay, so am I putting down hero's choice?
I did it. It's cool.
Humanity. Do I become a monster and join the monsters, or do I stay being human?
Well, okay,
ooh.
Never mind. I'll write down what measure is a non-human then.
Sometimes they can be used to push the story forward in a kind of an unnatural way that doesn't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of basically forcing
the kill the wise old mentor.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, it's time for some conflict.
What was it? The unnecessary squirrel or rodent or something? What was it?
Unnecessary weasel?
Yes, that's the one. Sorry, I knew it was a rodent or something. It's just like a thing you put in because the trope demands it, and it's just random. Otherwise, it doesn't really fit the story, but you're doing it because you kind of feel you should.
Like when they're going through a forest in a fantasy novel and they always see a freaking squirrel.
Squirrel
always.
Someone writing down the unnecessary
yeah.
on separate ones, you need to.
Some of the Japanese tropes are quite interesting, like the ones they use in the anime, like the red on and blue on.
No, I didn't.
You're writing that down.
I don't.
Oh, that's a character type. Okay, red Oni, blue Oni is it's a character thing. So it's essentially you've got your straight man and your
unstraight man.
Yeah, and your cloud cuckoolander or whatever you want to call
yeah,
it.
Like red Oni, blue Oni.
So an example would be Jesse and James from
Team Rocket.
Yeah, Team Rocket
mm-hmm.
from Pokemon. She's the red. He's the blue.
Okay.
But that also,
straight
gets,
man
that also gets used with the main hero and the protagonist.
It can,
and,
yeah.
The brothers separated at birth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they come color coded for your convenience.
Yeah. Superpower
schoolgirls.
Oh, the one with
Superpower schoolgirls.
The version with the noble hero and his dark and broody friend.
That's right. That's
oh
right.
God.
No, his evil twin who's got the like the little
the goatee
the
goatee
of
the eye patch.
Evil.
This is going to take a while.
and a long, wavy black hair, which is unkempt at best.
Okay.
I always
other ways level. To use tropes badly. I have dropped in with no foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah.
Will they just appear because it's a fantasy novel and we should all have one of these?
Dragons.
Tropes.
Always
have
dragons.
Mm-hmm. Ta-da, dragon. We haven't mentioned it till now, but it's now burning down the village.
Who's writing that one down?
Well, it's not a trope, it's just
so dropped in with no foreshadowing.
Yeah, so you sort of just drop in a trope. It's a little bit unnecessary, but it's
that's
well, I mean, yeah, it is that one, but that's pretty much a fish out of water. Oh, wait, no, fish out of water means something else. That's when you get Arthur Dent is a fish out of water.
Yeah.
I've got a fish out of water in my story. I didn't even know that one existed.
Oh, yeah,
a fish out of water in the
oh dear. Anyway, but yeah, it can be a way of relying on the trope to do the work for you. So not feeling like you kind of have to explain why stuff is happening, you're just relying on the trope to tell the reader for you.
Yeah, but so to take the fish out of water thing,
yes,
I'm using it as a method of explaining something that's different.
That's usually
that's,
how it's used, and it's quite a good way to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so,
fine.
So,
yeah, no, using it in a way that makes sense
is
good.
Fine.
But also,
that's
we're
totally
going
great.
Ways that you could basically use tropes badly.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's using tropes to as a shorthand, and we'll get to the good stuff shortly, or there's just dropping it in and expecting your reader to kind of not need the explanation or context. There's
yeah.
just, and here's a trope, and off we go.
So there you go. I was using a trope. I didn't even know. And I was using it correctly.
Well done.
yeah, if you do screenwriting units at uni or read screenwriting books, they'll give you like all the screenwriting tropes, which includes the straight man and the foil, the and the comedy foil, or rebel foil, or, you know, whatever. the fish out of water story, all that. That's in, basically all the script writing books.
Yep.
Usually I think it's something about a strangling a cat or a cat in a tree or something. I don't know what it's called. There's a really famous screenwriting book. Something to do with a cat.
Cat in a Hot Tin Roof?
No.
Is a play.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I think it's one about not killing the cat.
Oh,
no, you can never kill the cat. Like from Aliens.
Jones.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, the only one to survive.
Is there an official name for the trope where you're not allowed to kill the dog? You can kill as many people as you want, but don't
kill
the dog. That upsets people.
Oh, no,
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 kick
no,
no,
no. You can
no,
kill
no,
the
no,
dog.
Kick the dog is a different trope.
If you kick
the
dog, shoot the
dog.
That's
another different trope.
That's right, because then you're the bad guy, and it shows
yeah.
you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
shoot.
If it's a survival movie, you can't kill
the
dog.
Where the bad guy is, and to show that he's evil.
Yeah, yeah, that's kick the dog. That's what that trope's called.
Death
by numerical medal. That's the dog dies trope. Death by Newbery Medal. Like if you see a book with a Newbery Medal award on the cover, the dog's going down.
Oh, sorry. No, I was not paying attention. Never mind then. That's probably a as in like Serpent of Eden reference.
Possibly, but like it happens in Harry Potter.
Wait, we get a shot of.
Where Draco eats an apple. There's an apple, a half-eaten apple, just left in. In shot with no attribution of who put it there.
It's some kind of
biblical
reference.
Okay, yeah, I don't know that trope.
It's well, I think from cinema scenes where they like point
anything else about what tropes can do badly for us?
I've got
making story predictable.
Ooh, so predictable, especially with the bad boyfriend trope.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It can make it kind
always,
of
always get redeemed.
Hmm?
Does a bad boyfriend always get redeemed?
Well, I guess that depends how you write it.
Yeah, I suppose so.
It's up to you.
Edward Cullen doesn't get redeemed, as far as I know.
No, all right, how can we use tropes for good?
Subverting them.
Subverting tropes, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What does that do for us?
It surprises the reader. Well, some tropes can be very commonly subverted, but there's some that... that you can twist in an interesting fashion. I mean, the prophecy twist is so done to death, it's its own trope now.
You mean like the self-fulfilling prophecy?
Not just that, but like the prophecy. They misinterpreted the prophecy, always a big twist. But yeah, it's so
I think my favourite version of that is "And all the world shall turn to ash." It's from the second Harry Potter... it's from the second Pokemon movie. And they thought it meant that the world was going to be destroyed.
And then Ash showed up.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Okay, yeah, so subverting tropes can be good. Like stereotypes, tropes set up reader expectations. So you can play with that and play off that quite effectively. You can also do it quite badly, so it's worth being careful, but it can be really powerful as well. What else? How else can we use them for good?
They can set parameters.
Yeah.
It's like, these are the acceptable tropes in this genre, like romance. Romance's got really strict parameters, but inside those rules, you can do pretty much whatever you want. It's like gardening. You have to stay inside the fence, but inside the fence, you can do what you want.
Yeah.
The trope sets the fence, so you know what you can change and what you can't.
So it's a good way for, I think someone mentioned setting before, and they tend to be, again, culturally based, so it sort of nails us down in a particular time and place. And
especially
genre.
In thriller. In
yeah.
Thriller stories.
Can be good
yeah.
for the reader for any particular sort of book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, that's with coming back to that publishing thing you were saying with the genre.
Yeah.
Tropes and stereotypes. It's the same kind of
yeah.
principle where... it does help with the discoverability, and you might look like books like, and you know, that kind of.
Yeah, also
effect.
Reader experience.
Mm.
It helps to build suspense in horror. Like, if the setting is like an alleyway, the reader's automatically going to go, oh shit, what's going to happen? But if it's like an ice cream parlor,
yeah.
where you're going to stage like a feature murder scene, that they come across. It's just like a complete shock, whereas like suspense is kind of a, its own romance. You have to like build it up.
Mm.
Yeah, that's good suspense. Like
yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock.
So you'd have put them in an alley and then have the cat jump out.
Yeah, yeah.
In
the alley and they get out and then they die.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought there's a word for that one. I'm trying to remember that trope's name specifically, the subverted
and,
expectations.
Sir Christopher
yeah.
Lee said there's nothing
trope.
More frightening on screen than an open door that's
yeah.
like well, it's just filled with blackness and yeah.
Mm.
Oh, jump scare. Duh.
Jump scare.
Like.
Jump scare, yes. Thrillers. They can be quite familiar and easy to connect to. So again, sort of expectations and easy ways into stories and setting your fences.
They work.
Yeah.
Like
they, just, well, they can work.
Well, not all of them, but there are plenty of tropes out there that do work that people use because they're good, because they make sense, because they work.
I was going to say that some tropes have logical consistency.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the small, angry man, it's a logical consistency. You know, he's been picked on his whole life, he's had enough, you know, he gets out the baseball bat and...
Well,
he knows.
Totally incomplex.
Like, not even, like, that trope. Like, you can go for the more metaphysical tropes, things like Chekhov's gun. You use it because it works.
You're writing it down?
He's writing it down.
The moment of self-doubt. The moment of self-doubt can work really, really well, no matter how many times you
heroic
use it.
Heroic BSOD.
Is that what it's called?
Blue screen of death, yes.
Heroic blue screen of death.
Yes.
But someone who's under that kind of pressure is going to worry. This is what people do.
Yeah.
That's why it works so well.
Yeah. And I think the lasting ones do last for a reason.
Yeah, and powerful ones are powerful for a reason.
Yeah.
Ooh, there you go. Controversial question. What's the most powerful trope you know?
Boy Meets Girl?
Yes.
I'm
not going to say it. Or Save the World.
There's a lot of really common
ones. Do we have favourites?
I wouldn't even know where to start.
Just one.
One.
It's like trying to pick a favourite book.
Yeah,
how can you choose just one?
Or choose a favourite child.
I can do
that one's easy
one.
For me.
Yeah, exactly, me too.
One comment I came across is that almost every trope has a silver lining and can be used well. And that includes things like it was all a dream.
Oh, I hate that one.
Yes.
All right.
But there
yeah.
are instances that have actually been used quite well. Don't ask me the name, but you can't.
I was going to say, I'm going to challenge you,
right?
It's a potential it was all a dream, but, oh, God, Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
No. Haven't you seen the director's cut?
That's what I'm talking about, the director's cut.
Inception.
Alice in Wonderland
was Wizard of Oz. I read a short story once that was actually a really good version of that. Yeah, it's you can use them well, they're just really hard to pull off without being cheesy and crap. But, you know, there's a lot of those really cheesy tropes out there that if you work hard enough, you can make them good.
Like, the Mary Sue is almost universally considered a negative trope, but...
Yeah.
Well, it's for Batman.
Yeah, technically Batman's a Mary Sue. He hits nearly all of the criteria.
Mm.
Stephanie's also a wild psychopath.
That's not necessarily not part of the criteria to be a Mary Sue.
As far as we know, not necessarily a self-insertion either.
No, yeah, he's lacking that. That's the one thing that Batman hasn't got. Although the self-insert aspect of Mary Sue has been downplayed a lot. Originally, Mary Sue was exclusively a fanfic thing. Like, it literally could not occur
yeah.
outside of a fanfic. And nowadays you can, so...
Yeah. It's one of those sort of almost optional criteria for Mary Sue these days. Yeah, any other really cheesy tropes that have been used well? Have you ever seen the Mary Sue used well, actually, effectively?
an effective use of a Mary Sue.
One that you didn't want to punch in the head.
Wow.
Because that's my usual
response. I was going to say, I suppose we have to find effective there. I mean,
well, Batman is very popular. Superman is also. And both could
sorry,
argue...
Sorry to mention Twilight twice in one night.
Yeah, our protagonist there is a Mary Sue. I mean, she's a completely different type of Mary Sue to Batman, but she is...
She is, but I also wouldn't say they pulled that one off.
But
well,
no. That doesn't...
I was going to say, I would wonder if she's somehow Mary Sue without being extreme.
She's what's called...
Well,
she's the...
She's an empty Mary Sue.
Yeah, the ones that are designed specifically to sort of...
To allow you to self-insert into them.
Yeah.
She doesn't really have much of a personality. There's not much going on inside Bella because... The intention is for the reader to be that person.
Yeah,
same
way
with
a lot of recent military movies where the...
Generic grizzled white male character.
Not even grizzled, just a generic white male nobody soldier who exists so that you can... So that...
You can kind of
you
be
can put yourself
through
in
the story.
Shoes and I guess to... I guess may... Bump up sales of war bonds.
No, nowadays it's the game of war, Call of Duty games.
Well, it is the movie's way of doing that, but yeah, I suppose Call of Duty.
Yes. A really classic example of the Mary Sue character, who is so perfect and wonderful and part of everything, was written by Frances Hodgson Burnett, and I'm so disappointed in her when I read this particular one. It's called The Lady of Quality. And this character... is so amazing and strong and self-willed as a newborn that she manages to subvert her mother's attempt to smother her.
That's a pretty good muscle control.
She's about three when she really impresses her daughter-hating father by riding a horse.
Okay, I know someone who rode horses at 3 years old.
Yeah.
My grandmother did.
Mm-hmm.
Did
she
climb by herself?
No.
Did she
get
into the stables and climb onto the horse all by herself and unassisted?
Not as far as I'm aware, though.
Yeah, and then it just goes on from there, and she winds up actually murdering someone who is dead to, try to...
Did she say dead, or who was
dead?
He has dared to try to lay a hand upon her. Her sister dies of guilt at having been a witness, but her final words are to tell the main character that, I want you to live and be happy. And it's just,
oh my God.
I have never met a more objectionable Mary Sue in my entire life. I mean, this is Mary Sue in her purest form.
Oh my God.
That is a definition. See,
and you can get it for free on Thing. Project Gutenberg.
See, I was going to ask if Mary Poppins was a Mary Sue.
Not really.
Not in the books.
She's not.
I don't think she's.
I don't remember it. I've seen it once, but I don't remember it. I don't think
she is literally described as practically perfect in every way at one point.
Okay.
Yes.
But she's much more of a Gandalf. She's not the
wise
mental.
That's right. Her function in the story is to, enable the growth of the other characters.
Yeah.
The story's not about her.
Yeah.
It doesn't
happen.
She's just the character. She's,
yeah,
she's,
see, the only time, technically, to be a Mary Sue, the character has to be, the story has to be about them. If it's not, then they're more the ace or a different trope of that nature.
So the Mary Poppins Nanny McPhee example. Nanny McPhee was the Mary Sue either.
The ace is
no,
the
they're much
favorite.
Closer to fulfilling other roles like the ace or the mentor or the Dumbledore or,
How's the Dumbledore mentor talents? anything else? So, or any objections to pretty much every trope can be used well if you do it right. If you do it a certain way.
Here's an interesting trope. Darker and edgier.
What?
What?
Darker
and
edgier. When something...
Darker and edgier.
Yes.
So this is just when something gets more serious. An example of something that I think has done it really well, Red vs. Blue. It started out as just a talking heads, cheesy kind of comedy web serial. Now it's got surprisingly in-depth story and characters. People have died in it. It's been all really hardcore and great, and it's still really good. I still like it. An example of something that's done it badly?
Marvel Comics?
That's hit and miss, though. It's really...
I was going to say, as an example of doing it well, would be the Batman movies.
Yes.
Going from
Christopher Nolan.
All through to Christopher Nolan being the Dark Knight.
Tim Burton.
So someone else wanted to write it down, but the kill the parents to start the story.
Oh. At least
the
four
parents.
Superheroes that I can think of have that exact.
It's pretty common that superheroes will lose at least one parent, if not both.
And
science fiction.
Yeah.
Video games, at least one of the player characters' parents will be dead nearly all the time. Especially Japanese ones for some reason.
And it's amazing how often the death of the parents starts the story. It's just like, okay, well now the kid can wander off and do all this.
Well, there's no parent to keep them at home anymore.
Let's see, Harry Potter, Star Wars,
Batman,
Superman, Spider-Man, Daredevil?
Yes.
His
father
died.
His
dad. Blood. I meant the other way around. His dad's dead.
His mother was questionable.
Oh, yeah, because
both
of his parents drowned.
Sorry?
Yeah.
That's the Lord of the Rings. Frodo just mysteriously turns up in his uncle's place.
Yeah.
It's not mysterious. His parents drowned.
Rat and Hobbit. If you read the back.
it is a really common trope. Like, you know, most of the X-Men, their parents are dead.
Every single Final Fantasy game.
Yeah.
Except the first one.
Yeah, because there's no story to speak of that.
Okay, are there instances, like, it's a common trope. Does it work or not work, or...?
I think it's been overdone.
It sort of justifies a young hero being able to run around without parental supervision.
It's mostly a way to get this 15-year-old out saving the world.
Can I say that I've done it and then undone it?
You brought them back.
You subverted it?
It had to be in my story. Okay, one of my main characters is motherless because she's a science experiment, for goodness sakes.
Yes.
And her adoptive parents break her out.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I did it. Knowing I was doing it.
Well, you didn't take them away, you just gave them to her.
Well,
it's kind of the opposite.
Once
again,
the story's not over yet.
We did say earlier that any trope can be used well. So, like, even if you hear us lambasting a trope and going, no, this trope is absolutely terrible, it doesn't mean you can't still use it.
The death of the parents one. I've never seen an example where, you know, it's like, wow, this is a really good idea. That worked really well. I think Harry Potter was the closest that ever came.
Yeah.
That it, you know.
Like, I've seen instances where it's necessary.
Yeah. And often, like, if the kid is aware of the death, like, Harry Potter's parents died when he never knew them when he was a baby. But if, you know, like, say, a lot of the superheroes, they either witness it or are at least... would remember, and you know, it's a certain amount of mental scarring that pushes them towards that certain answer. And villains are the same. Like, it's quite common in villains for the same reason.
Using superpowers to fight crime.
Is it a trope?
I'd say so.
Powers have great responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my god. Yes, you should probably write that one down.
I've already used my gun.
It's one thing.
I'll do it.
My arm's too short.
Great power and great responsibility.
That's why you tear them up.
I knew I brought two blue ones on my screen. Yeah, anything else? Any other fun tropes? What trope do you hate? What's your least? We've tried favourite, we couldn't pick one. Or name a trope that you really dislike. I'm just curious.
Bury your gaze.
Pretend they don't exist?
No, kill them during your story. Gays don't get happy endings. If your story's about gay people, they're going to die.
Oh, I hate that one.
Yeah.
Not in my story, they're not.
The gay people are all gay people at the end.
Runaways managed to kill the gay girl, fat girl, and the black guy.
What?
Oh, that's another one I really don't like. The black guy dies first.
Yeah.
Black guy dies first.
Yeah. If your name is Token, goodbye.
Red shirts.
Red shirts, yeah.
Red shirts. Although, mate, it is hilarious how prevalent they've become in society despite being
in one show.
Well, it's really funny because they didn't even have red shirts at that time. To start with. And then they got red shirts, and then the red shirts became what the higher ranks wore.
Yeah, they didn't become the badge of death until the later one. All right, I've got a bit of a fun bit of exercise, but I do need all the cards back, please, that I've got just writing on. Greens, blues. This is very fun.
Not all your cards are the same size.
Yeah, there's not. I couldn't really work out the track for the apple thing, but somewhere between like the snack is more interesting.
All I can think of is either does this remind you of anything, which is usually more sexual, or significant symbolism, which is really a very general trope anyway. So,
a trope I hate. Everybody is Jesus in purgatory, which is basically that's probably the wrong trope. Jesus symbolism. Everywhere. The protagonist must have Jesus symbolism. Big Man of Steel.
And the Matrix. The
Japanese really like it.
The random Jesus.
Something like take one across them on, please. Oh, damn.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Oh, wait, should be in part of that. Slide in blues, please.
I'm trying.
Dave.
Slide in blues, please. This one. I'm going to say take two of these ones. Oh my god.
Close your eyes.
How many am I taking?
Just one.
Just one.
One blue one.
Oh my god.
The little pink ones in front of
you. Mm-hmm.
Take one, pass them around. Take
two.
One pink one? Yes. Yeah,
I'll
suppose
two
of them.
Oh,
I got one of yours.
I saw one of mine, though.
Okay, so you should have two tropes, one stereotype, and a genre. Oh, you're going to write a blurb for that story.
I'd like a long one.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a
this
okay.
Blank.
I got my original.
Oh, did you get a blank one?
Yep.
There's nothing on my pink cards.
Oh.
I somehow got two, and neither of them have anything on them.
I've got nothing on my pink cards either.
What? I got one.
I got a big cat.
I didn't. Sorry.
I got mad.
You took two. I didn't need to. That was stuck together.
And you get nothing.
I got something.
Things.
Right? Okay. Now everyone should have a stereotype, two tropes, and a genre.
Right, two sentences about that story.
Can I just write on the back of the cards?
Eyes.
Can I just write on the back of the cards?
Sure.
Oh, this almost right.
I have Sauron.
All girls like bay boys?
Probably meant
bad
to say
boys?
Bad.
Gay boys?
Bad.
Boy.
I'm pretty sure it was meant to be bad, and my this is for sketching, not for writing. It doesn't work when I write with it very well.
Oh, no.
There are blank blue
cards. So I'm assuming maybe that's like the Eye of Evil sort of thing, like where evil people are represented by giant eyes. You'd be surprised how frequently that happens.
Slice of life.
Slice of life means like Seinfeld or just something where it's just nothing really happens. It's just a slice of life.
See, that's not my favourite genre.
No.
It's almost exclusively contemporary because you can't really. Well, I mean, you could try writing slice of life in other genres, and people do it, but yeah. It's kind of like a day in the life of. Okay. Where am I writing this? Where I drag it on here?
What loads of those?
Well, it's just like stuff like a day in the life of sort of stuff. Like a lot of contemporary novels are slice of life.
Sorry, just like that. Not my kind of stuff that I'm reading.
What? Slice of life.
Slice of life. Someone would
have, you done, have you done a creative writing course?
Never.
Have you ever?
That's my problem.
Okay, so the Devil Wears Prada, that counts as slice of life. The Devil Wears Prada would be considered slice of life.
Fashion! Yes!
Hey, that's a really good movie.
It is.
Thank you very much.
See, this is like a problem. This is what you get for complaining.
That's the last one.
You give him erotica.
For complaining.
See, now this would be really interesting for erotica.
Why do you get the ones that just suits erotica so well? It's a skill, I swear.
Can I have another blue card? I'm really not sure how to slot South African into fantasy without
being unfortunately racist.
You can put a racist Mexican character into Star Wars.
Thank you.
Hold on. I'm just trying to think if there is actually.
Like, how do I do South African in a world that doesn't have Africa? How?
Well, it's just take that stereotype and just drop it.
I'm not even sure that stereotype is.
What is the South African stereotype? Is that like just poor black people?
Okay.
So which that's what's interesting is because if you get the white people, it's the Dutch.
So we're looking at taking the stereotype.
The Afrikaners, yeah.
Does it have to be the stereotype that's on the card? As in,
yes.
So when you go Muslim, it's burqa is the stereotype, so we're looking at that.
No, just
one of the other stereotypes about
a
Muslim.
Because they don't all actually have writing on,
I've got the pitch.
Okay.
So mine is.
Hang on, people still writing. We'll come back and we'll do them in a second.
What's the director? Neil Blomkamp, South African, every villain in a Neil Blomkamp movie ever. District 9, Elysium.
Well, that's because he uses like one actor.
The crazy guy.
He lives in South Africa.
Yeah, he is.
That's
African.
Why he keeps
I know
setting
you're
up there.
About, I forget his name.
It was in the A-Team.
Yes,
yeah.
He was Murdoch in the A-Team. Anyway, write your thing.
Charles O'Copley, something like that.
Yes, Charles O'Copley.
So examples of the ace.
Have you read Name of Gwyn?
Oh God. You're right, he is, and I hate him and I want to punch him.
Okay, so the ace is really spectacular. He's like a Mary Sue, but male. And
oh, not necessarily.
Well.
Good examples of. You can have female aces, like, but not.
They're peripheral characters rather than the main character.
Yeah, if your main character is the ace, then you're probably looking at a Mary Sue.
Yeah.
They're good at everything they do. And they're often dead by the time you get to the main story.
So they're more of a secondary sort of character.
They tend to be, like, have you seen Blackadder? Do you remember the character, that wolf guy? Flashheart. He was an ace, technically.
Did you ever watch Pokemon with your kids?
Yes.
Gary Oak.
Okay.
In the
Yeah.
Eventually we find someone that's something that speaks to everyone.
No.
Although he's kind of an arsehole, Ace. But then
the ace can be an arsehole. They don't necessarily need to be nice. I mean, I've seen versions of nice aces, but like.
I got my kids into Pokemon.
I never got into Pokemon.
Wow.
I was like just about to graduate high school and came out. Didn't do anything.
Well, I was like 10, so.
You were a teenage mutant ninja turtle man.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I love them too.
When the first live action movie came out, this is when I made our dad take us.
I loved cartoons like Ninja Turtles and Transformers, but I didn't get to see much of them because they weren't on when I was at the target age, and they didn't have many, many of the copies on VHS at the time at any of the video stores.
I used to love coming here to school and watching real cartoons like Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner.
Oh,
they
yeah.
I think it was 31 or something. It's awesome. You got to look it up.
I vaguely remember that.
Telemachus.
Small bells going
on. Right. Actually, let's change that.
G-Force.
You vaguely recall that.
I love the movie.
I was really into Beast Wars.
Yeah, I love Beast Wars.
For a tech.
I like how Dinobot's last words are Shakespeare.
No, everything that dude says is Shakespeare. He just quotes so much of it. Yes, I love Dinobot. Although I refuse to acknowledge that he died. Dinobot didn't die.
He just got...
He just transformed.
He just died and then...
When he came back as Dinobot 2, he eventually took over and then lived happily ever after with Rat Trap and Shut Up.
Okay.
That's the way it happened. You reject your reality. Substitute my own.
So now that we've saved all Transformers...
no, just two. The others can die.
What's the name of survives?
Are we all done? Are we good?
No.
Yep.
No, it's bad. No. I'm done.
All right. You want to start us off?
Okay.
So tell us what you started with. Yep.
So I had French for the stereotype, thriller for the genre, shoot the dog, and red only, blue no, blue red only, blue only. So what I have is two French cops, a good cop and a bad cop, a white cop and a black cop, investigate the murder of a dog. He was shot.
With an even tweet.
Cool. What am I next?
I got as far as terrorism. And so, there's a romance somewhere in amongst there.
So what did you start with? What's your prompts?
It was Muslim, so I was thinking, well, terrorists. And romance and the creator's pet. So can the ace be an evil dude?
Yeah,
sure. You can have evil
aces. So he's the terrorist who's made this pet to take over the world. And
an ace would do that.
Potentially, yeah.
So
where does the romance come
from? And
he falls in love with a female ace.
This poor woman gets caught up in it all, and some dude who's fighting the ace to try and get rid of the creator's pet, she gets caught up with him, and there's the romance. There we go.
Good.
Oh, it's a triangle.
Okay, yeah, the ace's eye are off as well. There we go. It's a triangle that's not wanted.
Because with a red only, blue only, you need a triangle.
Not necessarily.
Different story.
I've got a comedy, Dancer, Mary Sue, and Dark Edge.
Okay, so
you did really well.
That's
awesome.
So it's a black comedy about a dancer who keeps getting killed horribly and coming back to life. Sorry.
So what did you get?
I figured. Just some orphan undercover detective who used to work for the CIA, and she has to go undercover as a dancer, but she dances horribly, and that's a comedy.
So what he did is just Miss Congeniality.
Yeah.
But dancing instead of pageantry.
Yeah, but dancing. And her sidekick is some black dude that gets killed off. Or is that another trope?
That is another trope.
You can add tropes.
You can add them, that's fine.
That can go into dark and edgy, but people will realise that.
But the dark and edgy part is the murder scene she has to solve.
Oh, yeah.
And then she finds out her mom is a stripper or something.
You got really into this.
Her
not
father,
the stripper.
The stripper. Or her... Oh, her long-lost dad is running a brothel or something. I don't know.
But there's something parental and wrong in that.
Yeah, and that's why they gave her up.
I think she's a stripper.
I think you need to stop.
But that's the funny part.
Okay, so
I
got...
to see that.
Yes.
Okay, I got paranormal, bisexual, and then my two tropes with the scrappy. They've written wands, and with the one chooses the wizard Mr. Potter under it, so I'm assuming they're talking about like the chosen one's weapon, where the item picks the chosen one. So for my story, I've gone the dude. We've got a dude. He's protag dude, whatever. He finds a wand. Well, he finds an old stick, which he picks up, and it turns out it talks to him. It used to be Merlin's wand. It's self-aware, and it decides to make him Merlin's successor, and it's going to teach him how to be the next Merlin. But he's like, fuck this shit. I want to go off and have lots of sex with everyone. Dudes, chicks, all of them. So the idea was that the wand would be the scrappy, because it'd be annoying and...
Okay, I've got satire, the librarian, a villainous father, and women in refrigerators. So what I can... a librarian tries to track down the person stealing books from the library, only to discover that it is her own father. Will she be able to convince him to stop, or will she wind up dismembered and kept in the freezer next to her mother?
Okay, in my tropes I've got, apple eating, villainous apple eating, burial games, it's litfic, and a doctor.
Okay, what did you come up with?
In this the serious Christian Lickfic, a crazed apple-jumping doctor works with homosexual patients he despises. But while he learns the love of God for every week, the gays die by AIDS anyway.
That's awful.
Yeah, good job.
That sounds like literary.
Literary.
Sounds like misery lit.
Over the west, a redhead, death by Newbury metal, which I had no idea what the hell that was until I looked it up, and it was great power comes great. So what I wound up with, a redheaded hooker with a literal heart of gold walks the dangerous line between using her super-powered heart to attract men into Gold Rush Town, while another attracting psychos who would kill her for the gold within her. She dies at the end when someone discovers her secret.
Oh, my turn. I got skinny as my stereotype. My two tropes were Dark Abbey and The Chosen One. And mine.
Genre was
erotic. And then I suddenly realised it was pretty wood. Just, it's right there. It's pretty women, you know. So the chosen one arrives in his fancy car and rescues the skinny prostitute in a dark alley, and I suddenly realised I'm writing pretty women.
Pretty woman, but with more sex.
Pretty woman with more sex.
Not any that we saw.
No.
In good cinema, all the action happens.
Yeah, but that's not erotica.
Oh, come on.
Erotica is on
Shades of Grey, one sex scene in the movie, it was missionary.
That's because it's bad.
And that's because it's Hollywood.
Go on, last one.
Okay,
my stereotype was tomboy, my genre was fantasy, and my tropes were all girls like bad boys and Chekhov's gun. Okay, so I just went straight for the cheese.
Cheese.
Jeez. In the dragon arena, only the best survive. Nara is one of the best, a duelist few can match. But her greatest rival is also her greatest weakness, the handsome rogue known only as Blue. Together, they could battle anything, but trust is a luxury that may exact a terrible price, especially with the annual challenge of Erasmus the Dragon on the line.
Dun, dun, dun!
Well done. Thank you.
Great dramatic reading.
Thank you. That's what we like.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of 80s fantasy. We've got a little bit of time. Do you want to do one more?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
You gonna help?
Yeah.
Done?
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Well, that's it. That's what we've got for today.
Stop recording.
Turn off the recording.
Yes, okay. Well,
just kind of have all this unattributed dialogue.
Thank you.